Hi, my name is Fredrik Sjöberg. I'm the host for this episode. The title for today's episode, Biomechanics Doesn't Matter in Physiotherapy, is officially our first clickbait title on our podcast show. You're welcome. Even though you might find arguments that biomechanics actually matter within physiotherapy, I named the episode after I edited the episode and I had the thoughts of, do biomechanics really matter in our day-to-day practice as physiotherapists? I'm very eager to share this episode with you. I like to think that I have a good intuition and I have some logical sense, but I still have the feeling that I may be thinking too complicated around some aspects of our professional role as physiotherapists. I hope you find some clinical nuggets and maybe some enlightening take-home messages after you have been listening to this episode. At least I caught myself thinking about some of the topics Greg and I discussed during our little talk. I hope you find this episode relevant and interesting, and if you like what you hear, please give Physi Podcast a good rating and some feedback on your streaming platform. We have a website with relevant literature to every episode at www.physi.no, and please go and follow us on Instagram and Facebook if you like. So, let's start the episode, and good listening! Hi and welcome to this episode on Physi Podcast. Today I am very honored to have a guest with us, a person I've been looking up to for a long time, and that's Greg Lehman. So if we had a crowd here, I would say a round of applause and then we all would applaud. Welcome to the podcast, Greg.
Not everybody, but yeah, thank you.
To my knowledge, you are a physiotherapist, you're a chiropractor, you're a strength and conditioning specialist. And would you tell us just short a bit more about yourself?
I'm not technically a chiropractor anymore. I let my license go, but in Canada it doesn't make any difference. With strength and conditioning, I don't work with teams anymore. I did that a while ago, but I do like, I guess you'd call it personal training or creating strength and conditioning programs for people. So that's a big part of my rehab. My background's like everyone else, you know. I did an undergrad in kinesiology and then a master's in biomechanics and then 4 years chiro. Then I was in working for years and then went back to school for 2 year physio. And there we go.
Wow. Yeah.
So I've been in clinical practice like in different forms for like 25 years, essentially, and as a physio for the past 12. Yeah, there we go.
Wow. Yeah, it's a lot of education. And I recently saw you have been picking up the skateboard.
I like to humble myself. You know, it's actually really is probably the worst. Like I'm always mediocre or average at sports, except for skateboarding. I'm like horrible at it, like, and I thought I'd be able to pick it up and do stuff, and it's terrifying, like, and I'm so disappointed in myself.
No, but it's all about like the level of stoke you get if you like really get that trick. So I totally back picking up the skateboard any time. Yeah. But as you mentioned, you have been studying biomechanics, and I was hoping that we may discuss this topic today. So I hope we can talk about biomechanics within physiotherapy.
Sure.
In my vision, it's like two schools, if you like really separate them, and how we vision the biomechanics. And some people have like a really strong biomechanic bias towards treatment entities you choose, or a strong bias towards pain science, and sometimes in conflicts to patient beliefs. If you have a patient and coming to the clinic, and sometimes they really think that we do a lot of biomechanic stuff, and like there's been a paradigm shift within our profession where maybe years ago there was like really on the structural level, really into the biomechanical part. But these days, at least in modern physiotherapy, there is like a really, really strong bias towards this pain science. And I think that's you have been doing courses now in Norway within the last months, and the course you're doing is called Reconciling Biomechanics with Pain Science. So yeah. I'm really looking forward to discuss this with you.
Do you want me to comment on that, or do you just want to jump into any specific questions?
Well, we can jump right into the questions, really. A big question is, how can we know whether a patient experiences less pain because of following through with a like very specific, carefully monitored exercise program versus the natural healing of the tissues?
You can't. Okay, so like, everyone needs to give themselves a break. You have no idea. That's why we do research programs, and that's what I don't. But that's why there's a control group to get an idea of why someone got better, and to control for all the other factors that aren't specific to the treatment. And even then, that only tells you the average. It doesn't even tell you on an individual level why someone recovered. So people need to, I would say, like, we're often too hard on ourselves. You know, it's, I don't care why people get better, to be honest. I'm kind of a pragmatist here. As long as I'm like ethical to them and honest with myself, then, and I feel like I'm giving the best care. But you can't be a scientist at the level of one patient. You can experiment, but you can't arrive at truths. So just move on.
Yeah, true. But like, that was a huge conflict I had myself during the study, where I didn't like see a lot of patients, but I kind of read the literature, and I was like wondering what are we actually educating ourselves into? Because on paper, it doesn't seem that we do a lot of things that work, but in your opinion, what's our role as a practitioner or a physiotherapist?
Our patients will tell us our role, like that's the big thing. But usually when people come to you, they have pain, they want to be out of pain. And then hopefully there's things that they're missing in their life that they want to start doing. And that's what I believe I'm focusing on, you know, or certainly I think I'm better at is like, what are you missing? Because you have pain. What do you want to start doing? And then you're trying to unravel, like, okay, what are the barriers to someone resuming, you know, things that they love, and, you know, what's stopping them? And then our job is to, you know, help them with them, remove those barriers, if you ask me. And what's cool, this is, you kind of like went down that unfortunate thing where you feel like nothing works. I'm a bit on the opposite, and I'm incredibly critical of the research, but it's my conclusion isn't to say nothing works. It's like, we have a ton of options, and where we're often wrong is our assumption of the mechanisms. And that's why I'm like, I'm interested in the mechanisms. But I don't need to know them to help people. So like, did you see the difference there? A really nice paper for people is in the VMO knee pain literature by Dr. Cowan, Sally Cowan, and Dr. Kay Crossley, who are just, if you want to learn about knees, you just type in their names, and, you know, and Kim Bennell, that sort of group, and Dr. Hinman as well, all of Australia, you type in their names and you just learn everything. And you can see the shift that they've had through their careers. Where 25 years ago, they're talking about, you know, we need to fix the VMO. It's the knee pain is due to, and they would never be this reductionistic, but yeah, I'm simplifying, is due to a problem with how the VMO fires. So we fix that and someone gets better. And they wrote an editorial 2 years ago just saying, sure, that helps people, but maybe that's not the reason that they're getting better. Instead, it's a graded activity program. We give them a really nice, positive, optimistic messaging for the pain. We explain that, you know, hurt doesn't equal harm. You know, we devalue the imaging findings, meaning the wear and tear, whatever's going on in there. That's not that related. And then slowly help them resume their activities they love. And then they write, you know, what's important here isn't necessarily the specific exercise or specifically quote unquote fixing someone, but, you know, getting exercise activity adherence. And to me, people are like, oh, no, so we don't know anything. The VMO doesn't matter. No, no, no. This just means there's lots of options here.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's it. That's my career and pretty much my course in a nutshell. So don't come. There you go. That's all I got.
But I can see where it's going because you have a lot of opportunities, and in order to know your opportunities, you need some knowledge, right? And I also teach lessons in biomechanics for first year students on the physiotherapy education in Norway, and I tell them that they kind of need to learn the physics. They need to know the properties of the tissues in order to train our sight to see details of a movement, and that's like that's a cornerstone of our profession to actually see how people move, and that's been important for physiotherapists since the start, I think. But what is the most important aspects of the biomechanics for rehabilitation professions in your opinion?
So it's hard. I'm not sure if those things matter that much. Sorry. Although I'm so like if you take tendon stuff. So with if you look at the material properties of tendon, we know that tendons, in order to make them adapt, they need heavy load. Right? You know, greater than 70% or greater than strain of 5% or so. So that'd be like a biomechanical principle. Mm-hmm. And we know that how a tendon adapts to load would be to get stiffer rather than to get bigger. So it's a material property change. Mm-hmm. And that stuff's cool. But the problem where we're at here, and like, and you can go down a rabbit hole of like the way to do that. The problem with that is, it might lead you to thinking that in order for people to recover from tendinopathy, that's what you have to do, right? That surrogate measure of tendon stiffness is the most important thing. And then you might, it leads people to make conclusions like manual therapy isn't helpful because it won't make the tendon stiffer, or stretching isn't helpful because it won't make the tendon stiffer. Mm-hmm. And my only issue there is like, we don't know that the tendon has to get stiffer all the time to help someone get better. So that's the limitation of going down like that biomechanical rabbit hole, and which isn't so bad because then you can just say, well, I don't like this is what I do. I would say, well, I don't know if it has to get stiffer, but why not? I'm going to work, train them heavy anyway, because it can help with function and I know it can help with pain and it can also help with stiffness. And maybe that is important. However, where it's good to know that biomechanical stuff is so that you don't make like wrong statements about the body. Like I've heard people say, don't stretch tendons or stretch connective tissue like ligaments because it will make them less stiff, right? And then the joint will be unstable. And people will say that all the time. And so they'll say, oh, we have to loosen the connective tissue on the outside of the knee to change the patellar tracking, or the IT band is too tight, or the retinaculum is tight, or don't stretch a shoulder because it'll decrease the stability of the shoulder. Because they'll say that the ligaments stretch or something like that. And I'm like, that's not how mechanotransduction works. Right? Like stretching actually doesn't decrease the stiffness of a tendon or a ligament. And so I like biomechanics sometimes because it actually questions a lot of our old biomechanical ideas and lets you be more of an optimist. So I still believe in basic biomechanics because you're almost like you're not sure if you need to know that. So it's good to have that underpinning there. So you can keep your job, Frederick. You can keep teaching them this stuff.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But talking about stretching. I feel there's a lot of conflict about the stretching. Some people are like really into stretching. Some people are like totally saying you shouldn't do that. So what does the evidence say about stretching? If we
I'm a stretch, it's popular now to be like anti-stretching, but I was I'm not kidding, but I'm a stretching hipster. I was on the anti before everyone was anti. In 1998 I was telling people not to stretch because that's when The Work of Magnuson was coming out, but I was wrong. Like I went too far, and I just did it because people were so pro stretching. You have to stretch to prevent injuries. You have to do it to warm up. You have to do it to be healthy. So I went too far, and that's what most of us, that's what everyone objects to. And now I'm like, whatever, stretching's vanilla. You know, it's like blah. You know, it's just like cheese pizza. Yeah, it's just everyone's so I'll have some cheese pizza.
Yeah,
you know, one loves it. It's just it's just whatever, and that's how it should be. It's not like a massive force for good, and it sure as hell isn't like this massive force for evil. And so that's kind of what happened. People like react because people have way too strong opinions like supporting it, and so good scientists say let's settle down, but they maybe go too far and then like say how horrible it is.
Sure. Do you have any clinical examples where you actually would recommend stretching?
So this is what's surprising. Like if you go through the literature on, say, knee pain or even Achilles tendinopathy, you're going to find papers that look at stretching versus strength training. Definitely in the Achilles, there's a paper by, I think it's Noregard. It's maybe from 2007 or something. And there was no difference between the groups with Achilles tendinopathy, you know, and even if you think of it logically, like an eccentric loading, like 3 seconds down, hold it for 3 seconds, 3 seconds back up. That's just a loaded stretch. You know, it's just, I mean, if you just did it with body weight, well, that's a stretch. So it's kind of illogical to say that stretching is bad for the tendon. Adding load is good too, but so there's definitely pragmatic research papers that say it can be helpful. There's not a lot of research paper. There's no research paper saying that it sucks and that it's not helping clinically. And then in the knee, you'll see a number of papers where like you'll have a stretching group and then a control group that does nothing, which is pretty classic in our field. And the stretching group helps people with knee pain. So I don't understand like the vitriol. I do because I did it myself. I would look down on therapists that did all this stretching, and I thought it was so much better to do heavy resistance training. But I think what happened there, and this is where I have to be more honest if I can share this, like I've always loaded people heavy. Like that's my background. We got to load because I would see patients who weren't getting better with another therapist. And I say, what were you doing? Like all these like motor control or light load exercises or just stretching. And then I would treat them with heavy load and they would get better. And I made the faulty conclusion that, aha, heavy load is superior to light load because I was, or stretching, because I was seeing people who didn't get better with the light load and stretching paradigm programs. The problem is with that type of bias of mine, I did not, the people who got better with stretching and with light load stuff, they didn't come and see me, right? So, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I totally get it.
Like that's the problem with having an N of one and just being in your own clinic. You know, like, and so when I started working in clinics with other people, I'd work with people different from me and all they did was manual therapy. And then I'd be like, tons of people were getting better and they were getting heavy load and, you know, You got to be like, you have to not always trust your own eyes here. Like you have to be cognizant of your own biases, which I try to do.
Yeah, that's true.
Poorly.
But that brings like, how can you determine what you should do then? Because if both things work, how do you determine whether you want to do strength training, heavy load, or like stretching? Or any,
so this is the idea. Like you, so maybe instead of thinking we're fixing certain impairments, or like and or the diagnosis is always what drives your exercise selection choice. Maybe we use other reasons to choose exercise. So patient preference could be one. Someone has no desire to do heavy resistance training, and maybe they like doing stretching. Mm-hmm. Or converse could be true. If this is the genius therapy advice, if someone's done stretching for 6 months and they're not getting better, maybe we should try strength training. Yeah, no shit. Thanks, buddy. Yeah. But you know what I mean? Like that's, yeah. It's often that simple. Mm-hmm. I like to do this. This is where you think of yourself as being, we're health professionals. We want to promote health. Where, why don't we choose exercises that have extra secondary health benefits? Mm-hmm. You know, strength training, impact, you know, plyometrics for bone density, mm-hmm. muscle mass, fall prevention. You know, like almost anything will help someone 2 months from now, but what will help someone 20 years from now? That sort of idea. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you choose exercises for performance, you know, mm-hmm. Or exercises they love. And then the last thought is like, you choose the exercise that you love as mm-hmm. a therapist.
Yes.
Because you're really good at it. Yeah. And like your infectious beliefs about it will come across to the people and they get buy in and they love it and they're happy. I think of Neil Mai. I don't know if you know Neil. Yeah. He just finished his PhD. Congrats, Neil. He's the kettlebell physio.
Congrats. Yeah.
So everyone gets the goddamn kettlebell swings and he loves it. And his patients in his research studies do fantastic too. And they love it.
Wow.
Like I couldn't do that. I'm not a kettlebell. I have some kettlebells, but they just hold stuff down on the ground.
take them on the skateboard.
Yeah, sure.
Sure. Well, okay. So patient preferences, try something different than before. if the exercise has secondary benefits,
yep.
If it gives any performance benefits, or just share something what you love to do that they may buy in on. Like that's summarizing your thoughts.
And I would say like also for things like tendinopathy or hamstring strain, like maybe the tissue is really important or maybe a lack of range of motion is important or something like that. Mm-hmm. Do maybe address those things just because it could potentially be helpful. Mm-hmm. You don't have to know with certainty. And if it's not harmful to do, then why not go for it?
Mm.
Right, sure. So that you can still go in that biomechanical style, like, oh, let's build up the tendon stiffness. I don't know if they have to get stiffer, but why not?
Mm.
Yeah. That's the cover your ass exercise program.
Yeah, like the name of that.
It's belt and suspenders, meaning like if you don't want your pants to fall down, you wear a belt and suspenders.
Yeah.
That's
pretty safe.
Yeah, that's it.
So physiotherapists sometimes tend to focus on the quality of movements. Should we interfere with how people move?
So, sometimes this is sort of the idea of like, when do you change how someone moves, mm-hmm. right? And I would say that there's a few times when it matters. Like say you actually think that tendon stiffness or a specific muscle needs to be targeted or something like that. You just think it might be helpful. That's mm-hmm. where biomechanics is important. So if you think that you have a runner or a walker or a human, and you mm-hmm. think that you need to load up the glute med and the glute min for whatever reason, mm-hmm. then biomechanically you need to know that you need some sort of like torque in the frontal plane, mm-hmm. right? Because that's what those muscles do. You know, they work to move that they create hip abduction or they create, you know, they resist contralateral pelvic drop, mm-hmm. right? So you need to like put the person in a position where that moment or that torque is occurring. So if someone lies on their side and does a leg raise, like mm-hmm. a hip, like a leg lift, like up to the side, like hip abduction, yes. and they tilt their pelvis forward or they tilt it back a lot, well, that's not the best way to do it. If you tilt back, you'll work the hip flexors more. If you tilt forward, you work, you know, the glute max or the hip extensors more. So that's a simple way. Or if someone does a split squat, you're like, well, you're not really working your glute med and glute min here. It works a little bit because it's a hip extensor. But if you took your foot off the ground and did a single leg squat with your leg out to the side, then we know that'll create more of a moment in that plane. Mm-hmm. Or like if you want to load the knee more when you do a split squat, it's probably better to be more upright with your knee shoved forward more to get more stress on the knee. But if you want to work the hip more, then, you know, do the opposite. So,
yeah, sure.
That's when you would think of changing how someone moves if you have a specific, like, exercise target. Or we would change when someone moves because it feels better.
Yeah.
That's sure. It.
Yeah.
You know, like it's so simple sometimes. If you squat and you're really arching your back a lot and it feels better to be a little relaxed and flexed, then that's how you should do it. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, if someone's afraid to bend their back and when they do it, they're bracing guarded and rigid. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe don't brace, don't guard, don't be rigid. And mm-hmm. that feels better. Yeah. You know, or someone might flex their spine a lot when they lift something and mm-hmm. it keeps aggravating them and they sit down all day in a flexed posture and then mm-hmm. their aerobic activity is rowing and their back hurts to flex. You might be like, hey, maybe we shouldn't flex as much for a little bit of time.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's so easy. Like, we make it so hard. So yeah. We would help them. Hey, here, this is how you can do a deadlift and a squat with less flexion. Here's some different ways to sit, you know, with less flexion. And maybe we can work on your rowing or we'll wait. We don't have to do that right away. We can see how this works. You know, it's like so easy. I don't know why we make it so hard.
Yeah, well, I think physiotherapists and our patients tend to like overthink a lot of concepts. And when they seek professional help, Greg told me that I should flex my spine more when I'm lifting. Then the way we communicate these things, when you are supposed to change how they do something, how do you tell them in a way that's not actually damaging them?
I actually try to do more like the graded exposure style, the Vallejan and Peter O'Sullivan and JP Canero, the CFT group, mm-hmm. where what they're teaching more now is like you have the patient experience it first. Mm-hmm. Like just say, hey, try lifting like this, you know, try it like this, you know, let your back relax into this, whatever the technique is, mm-hmm. and ask them how they feel. And when they tell you they feel better, like that they kind of learn through that experience. And then you have like a debrief where you say, you know, this is great. We mm-hmm. maybe we start doing it this way. You told me you feel better. This is why it's okay. It's not inherently better. It's just that it feels better right now. We could maybe avoid arching your back for a few weeks. You can go do it in the future, but right now it feels better. So what do you think? Should we go with that for a little while? So like I'm an optimist, meaning there's no one right movement optimist. So there's no one right way to move, but there are probably ones that are less sensitive than others. And so it's just like, we're temporarily changing it. You've already shown me that it feels better that way. So let's go for it, maybe. Like, really, really simple. And then you would ask, like, what do you think about that? You know, what have you been told about that? That's the idea. And that's where the pain science education would come in. Like, you don't want to just... And I've failed at this. You want to tailor the education to them. Don't guess what their beliefs are. Like, let them tell you, and then you tailor the education to them. You know, see what they know already and go forward.
Yeah, that's a really good tip, to actually listen to the patient and kind of respond appropriately to what they're telling you.
Yeah.
So I feel like I'm jumping a bit forth and back, but I'm also very eager to ask you about like hands-on techniques and where does the hands-on techniques and the symptom modification thing coming to play? Does it work any better than strength training, for example?
So when it comes to pain, I'm all for it. It's weird, the biases we have, like the clinical practice guidelines are so inconsistent in manual therapy. And I think it just depends on which 7 authors, researchers, clinicians get on that clinical practice guideline.
Yeah.
You know, and that just tells me when you have these diverging opinions from researchers who know the literature, tells me it doesn't matter. That I would never say no to giving it a try. And what everyone says, and I agree with this is, you know, this is kind of different when I would say it 12 years ago because you weren't hearing it, or 20. My master's was in spine biomechanics, so I know all the old theories.
Yeah.
And again, I'm an old hipster on this one. Like, even then in my thesis, I was writing like, it's kind of what we say, like our explanations are all wrong about what spine manipulation does. Mm-hmm. But it seems to help with pain. Mm. That's it. That's the reason that you try manual therapy, because it might feel better.
Yeah, sure. Is that what you tell your patients too when you do?
So it's funny that ironically, somehow, like I was a manual therapist, but just I never got caught up in the biomechanical ideas, except a bit for fascia. I had a bit of a 3-month thing thinking I could like not break up fascia so much as like catalyze mechanotransduction.
Okay, meaning, that's a fancy word.
Yeah, well, mechanotransduction is like when you load tissue and it adapts, you know, like like with tendon. I thought maybe like my hands could do that because it was a force.
No.
And I know that's debatable. I don't think so now. What? It doesn't matter. So, so I used to do lots of manual therapy, and now I hardly do any. But I think it's just the patients that I'm seeing. It's just my style has changed. It's not necessarily better. It's just something about me changed, where I think that's what happens to our profession. Mm. Like you change, but maybe the research hasn't changed. It doesn't mean that what you're doing now is superior or more evidence-based. So that's my take on manual therapy. Give it a try sometime.
Yeah, sure. If the patient comes with a huge bias, him or herself towards this will help me. Is that like an indication for you to try?
I think so. Unless it's like, you know, 3 years of persistent pain, they just go from one manual therapist to massage therapist to chiro to whoever, and like have all these like poor ideas. You know, I need you to break up scar tissue or adhesions, or my bones are out of place. Some really like unhelpful ideas like that, then I wouldn't do it for sure or recommend it. I have to have like a few slow discussions over time, thinking like, you know, these ideas where like you keep chasing an impossible fix here, might actually be contributing to the persistence of pain. It's sometimes what I recommend then is like, go for a massage, but don't go to someone who thinks that they're fixing you. Just go because someone's like touching you, or like a spa massage where it just feels better. That's it. Like you just want a gentle relaxation massage, not because, you know, you're releasing the levator scap from the splenius capitis or something.
Yeah, that sounds like a nice way to handle a patient that is kind of medical shopping. That's basically what you're describing, that they're going to different professions asking for different type of treatments that they think would help.
Yeah. That's a tough one though. Like that's not easy. That's really hard. You certainly might lose some patients there. I know I have, where I'm not. But sometimes maybe they come back to you, or they come to someone else in the future who's similar to you. So
yeah, sure. So during your career, we have this section on the podcast where like the section is named the aha moment. Is there like any situation you can tell us about, or experience where your thoughts shifted around how you practice as a physiotherapist?
To be honest, I've been really lucky because I was exposed to a lot of good thinkers when I was young. Like when I was 21, you probably don't know I was reading John Sarno, who's like, he used to talk about how it was all emotions that were driving pain. And I remember doing a biomechanics class, and the professor, it was a lecture, it was a keynote, was talking about how we can't just change ergonomics, we have to address the psychosocial issues. And that was like 1997.
Yeah.
Like I wrote a paper in ergonomics about central sensitization and phantom limb pain in 1998. Like I was really lucky I was exposed to. Yeah. And when I did my master's, there's two chiros there doing their PhD. And they were like, you're going to chiro college, Greg. I'm like, yeah. And they're like, oh yeah. Cause I was doing spine manipulation research too. And they're like, all the stuff that chiros say is like full of shit. It's all, and physios too. Like,
yeah,
and
sure.
They just totally debunked everything. So I was like, whoa, really lucky. And even, you know, even with, and then Stu McGill was my supervisor. And like, I never got caught up in the whole transverse abdominis stuff because he was like, oh, that's nonsense. And then to me, that applied to the whole VMO retraining. Like, it was amazing how fortunate I was to not really get caught up in that stuff.
But
it made me quite lonely.
Well,
I didn't fit in.
I can imagine, like, back in the days, those principles wasn't like the most common around.
Oh, no. I remember being in chiro college just saying, like, I used to write, like, there weren't blogs, so I would write on a paper, and I printed out, like, 200 copies of, like, a blog and handed it out to the whole class before one of our classes because they were teaching all this bullshit. I think it was called, like, the bastardization of philosophy in chiro, and it was hilarious. I used to write op-eds, and, oh, my God, I was such an asshole. And then, like... I remember leaving a chiro class, running to my apartment and getting research papers because I couldn't pull, it didn't have PDFs in 1999 or they were just starting, and running back to class with like research papers on how full of shit the professor was. That's such a dick.
Yeah, but I think, yeah, that was, you actually did everyone a favor doing this. At least in your class.
No.
But have you experienced anything with a patient which kind of shifted
A little. Like, I was kind of into vleeming stuff in the SI joint with the form force closure. Like, I was, it kind of makes sense. Like, I was still, you know, into spine stability. Maybe I believed in exercises. I had, you know, doubts. I wasn't too sure. And I remember you'd kind of squeeze the pelvis to stabilize the SI joint. And then they would feel better if they lifted their leg. And I always tell this story about my hands slipping kind of, and I just have a bunch of ass fascia in my hands. Like, you know, I'm just stuck with like skin and fascia, and the person lifts their leg and they feel so much better. And I'm like, well, I'm not doing anything to the joint. I'm just tugging on ass fascia.
Oof.
So it's not a super aha, but it was like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah, it's more like, oh.
Whatever. Yeah, so now everyone, they get the ass fascia technique. Oof. I gotta trademark that.
Yeah, indeed.
It's all connected, right?
It's all connected.
That's all you have to say. Shoulder pain? Here.
Let's go. So... there is a lot of physiotherapy or health professional students that are listening to our podcasts. And what would you recommend them to read? What would you recommend them to watch, to practice? How do they develop their best skills?
So I that's what I always recommend. Like, pick a topic area you're kind of into, or like a question. Like, does load negatively influence, you know, knee osteoarthritis cartilage or something like that, you know, and then go learn everything about it. Like, pretend you're going to give a talk to the, I don't know, United Nations or something, or like, you got to prepare, like you be the expert. And then you just do that a couple of times a year or once a month. And then you are the expert. Like, that's it. You just kind of like pick a small area. Don't get too ahead of yourself. It could be like, do tendons need to become stiffer to recover from tendinopathy? Do movement patterns have to change to get out of pain? If you're into the shoulder, does muscle timing change? If it does, do you need specific exercises to do that? You know what I mean? Like, just find the areas that you're into and then say, I'm going to be the expert. Like, pretend you're kind of doing a mini PhD without having to do the pain in the ass of the research. Suckers.
That's suckers.
PhD.
Oh, so talking about the articles, is there anything? We are making this blog post on physi.no, which will be linked to this episode. And is there like any articles, any material to read that we could link up related to this episode that you think would be beneficial for the physio student or like any person who really want to develop develop more?
You know what? Like, I actually think good people aren't writing a lot of blogs anymore, but I still believe in them. When you have I'm actually trying to write more blogs. I think that's a better way sometimes to get a nice overview of the area. A well-written blog with references should be a good intro to a topic, and then you can dive deep into it. Like, I like Eric Mira's stuff if you want to learn about the knee and hip and ACLs, you know. So those, like, I'm still a fan of that. I would do that, and then you go read the research papers. The problem with research papers is they're just designed to answer one tiny question.
Yeah, sure.
So it's not the most efficient way to get a bird's eye view. The other way is you pick a topic that you're kind of into, and then find a researcher there who, not, I was going to say young, but maybe a new researcher, young, and then go find their PhD and read their introduction. Because what they've had to do a PhD is do a massive lit review and know everything about the topic area. So since you're in Norway, a really good example would be Marie Multebakk. I don't know how to say her last name. PhD on stretching in dancers and gymnasts. It's just a beautiful PhD. Her research is great, but she has I have her old PhD and I read it, and it's a great review of what stretching does. Yeah, like that people don't realize that most PhDs are out there on the university servers. That's the best thing to read.
Yep.
So those intros, yeah.
Okay, so
I'm just thinking maybe that would be a great blog.
Yeah.
I'll link to other people's PhDs.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be really good. We should.
Yeah, I'm a genius.
You're a genius. If you make this blog, I will definitely put it up on my blog so I can refer. So this is nice.
Yeah.
Is there anything we should if there should be one take home message from this episode? What would Greg say?
it might surprise, like, although it looks like I argue all the time on Twitter, it's actually less than ever. I would say, like, with all the debates we have, really try to understand what it is we're like. Sorry, this is hard here. Realize most of the debates we're just quibbling over little things that may not matter that much. Like, there's a lot of diversity in the profession, and I think that frustrates a lot of people, because if a student might say, oh, I go to this professor and they do this. I go to the next professor and they say, oh, don't do that, do this. And that can get really frustrating. What I would say is, like, try to look at the people who seem different, right? And then figure out, and remember, they're both helping people. Without a doubt, they're both helping people.
Sure.
Figure out what the common threads are between them. Right, that's the idea. Like, what's similar here? And that's why I started with that VMO editorial by Dr. Cowan and Dr. Crossley.
Yes.
You know, because that's kind of that in a nutshell. Like, I'm a bit bad like this. I have an idea, and then I find someone that's written a paper on it, and I'm so biased. I'm like, what a great paper. They agree with me. But, like, it really is, you know, that's kind of the idea. I'm not saying, like, VMO training sucks. I'm saying it helps people, but maybe for other reasons. That's the asset. So, like, what's the secret sauce? What's the magic active ingredient in that stuff? That's what you want to do. And you'll see this around the joints. Like, there's a paper on the scapula by McQuaig, I think, where they, and John Borstad, where they did this. They're like, they used to be into scapular dyskinesis, and now they're like, no, who cares about it? However, still doing scapular exercises are great, but for other reasons. So like, I bet almost every joint you can see something like this. Like, I will still give spine stability exercises, even though I could care less about spine stability. All right. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I don't think it's something you need to worry about, but I think the exercises can still be great.
I think it could seem confusing, all this stuff we have to learn, but it's still just keep it simple and just don't overthink everything we do and don't overcomplicate stuff.
Yeah. That's, try to find your principles.
Hmm.
I do have a blog.
Yeah, good.
On like treatment fundamentals or principles. I don't know if you search my name in that, you know, they work for me.
Yep.
It might be a starting point for some people.
Very good.
Then you get your principles and then you just fill in the details.
We'll put the link to your blog as well on our website. Thank you so much for tuning in with us on Physi Podcast, Greg. Greg Lehman was our guest today, if you didn't catch his name. And my name is Fredrik Sjöberg. And thank you so much for listening to this episode. And we'll talk to you later, or not talk to you later. You will hear us later on this podcast. So thank you for listening.
Thank you.